Welcome back, guys. DGS. Are we allowed to give the news yet, Wheels?
Oh, yeah. It's out there.
Go ahead.
No Cardinals game tonight. Cardinals game tonight rained out in Detroit, postponed. They'll play a doubleheader tomorrow. So I'll be normal. We'll finish up. Then we'll have a normal sports open line on KMLX. And then tomorrow, game one starts at 2:40, so 1:45 pregame. And then the regular game scheduled for tomorrow will be played right after that.
All right. Very good. It is Think Tank. Skip Weber needed to switch days, so we'll be doing the the Sweet 16 tomorrow. Today we have Jeff Rainford and Kurt Barr. Kurt, of course, is in charge of the elections out west in St. Charles County. And you had a little bit of controversy, little accusations, right?
Well, the voters voted, all 14% of them, and
could have just taken them all to Denny's.
And then the candidates who were not endorsed, the school board candidates that were not endorsed by the conservative groups won. And for some reason, there's people thinking that there's, you know, improprieties in the election because of that.
Mm. What evidence are they providing?
They haven't.
Oh,
You know, so they've asked questions like, okay, well, what was the results? Last election, what was the turnout in this precinct? And they're trying to like figure out like what went wrong, and you know, what went wrong is that you know more people voted for the first two candidates than the second two candidates.
In layman's terms, how does it work? Is it like computerized? Is it fill in the pencil and you can just see the numbers as they rack up? How do? Because I don't have any idea how it works.
So. You know, in St. Charles County, like most every county in the state, we have the paper ballot. Well, like every county in the state, we have the paper ballot. So, you know, voters, you know, fill in those little circles. They put that in the Scantron machine at the polling place. And then that machine has a thumb drive. And then at the end of the night, the poll workers bring me that thumb drive and then bring me all the voted ballots. And then we have a air-gapped laptop that we tabulate all the results. And then so and we start to – we have 105 polling places. So you know, we're going through this process 105 times of updating this information from each polling place. And periodically we'll take that information and we'll put it into a computer with the internet. And then we'll upload the results to our website so people can kind of see. So generally we'll put in the absentee numbers relatively quickly. Then we'll put in the area close to my office because the polling places nearest to my office are always the first to show up. And then, you know, eventually we get all of the polling places. It's really just, you know, taking that information, loading it up into a laptop, and then putting it on the website. It's pretty quick, easy.
As you were saying when you came in, this is what you do now, and you're a smart guy. If I said, Kurt, I got $1 billion for you, I just need you to rig this election, with your knowledge, could you do it in a way that no one would ever know? Or is that pretty much beyond possible?
That no one would know. No,
the other election workers.
I mean, for $1 billion, I could. You know, could we?
You don't get to use that money.
Okay.
You don't get to use that money.
Okay.
You got to do it on your own.
No, I mean that's the value of this system is there is a lot of checks and balances. So you know, not only is there a process to you know make sure the ballot is correct and make sure that you know there's Republican and Democrat judges every polling place, but there's also a process of hand count auditing, you know, percentages of all the ballots. And I have, you know, Republican, Democrat members of the central committees, the political parties who come into my office after the election and they do an audit, a verification board of the election results. And they take a look at, okay, here's the results that came in from each precinct and here's what you're reporting. And, you know, are there any inconsistencies, the number of voters who you checked in, the number of ballots you counted, is that the same? And so we have that outside a verification board on top of everything else. So the process is made to be, you know, complicated with multiple checks and balances so that no one person can just rig an election like that.
Interesting.
But it's also not unlike, if you ask me as an outsider only knowing about what I read in the paper, not unlike Georgia where President Trump, without any evidence, said the election was stolen in Georgia and the Secretary of State of Georgia, like the election commissioner in St. Charles, is a Republican and he said, I play it straight. The election was not stolen. And then, of course, nationally, the president asked the vice president and others to not certify the results. And as I understand it tonight, there's a little informal process where the county council has to maybe not certify the results, but accept the results. And there could be a little show there.
Yeah. So in St. Charles County, we have a council meeting tonight and the county had a tax extension issue on the ballot. And so I've submitted the certified results to the county for their one issue. And so they're going to read that into the minute so they can go to the Department of Revenue and say, hey, we're allowed to collect this tax for X number of years. That's just the process. But we do have one particular councilman who 2 years ago when the election results weren't the way he wanted. He thought that he could not accept the results of the election as somehow a way of like stopping the election or stopping the certification of the election. I mean, the election is over. The election is certified. The results of the election are that. All the county council can do is either accept their tax increase they put on the ballot or not.
Okay. I wanted to start with this question, and this is mainly for Mr. Rainford, but both of you weigh in on it. Better Together, which you both know intimately, and it was so fascinating when all this was going down before. If that were to come back up today, with everything that we know has happened and everything going on, especially with downtown and with the city of St. Louis, do you think Better Together would be looked upon more favorably, less favorably, or pretty much the battle lines would be drawn right where they were?
So the battle line will be drawn right where they were if it's brought up without any kind of communications ahead of time. And the reason I say that is, didn't make a lot of news, but about 2 or 3 months ago, a councilwoman, Shalonda Webb, I think on behalf of the county executive, Sam Page, put forward an idea that would require the uniform police standards for all of St. Louis County, including the municipalities. And there was such a hue and cry from the municipalities. It's like they were ready for Better Together Part 2 to come up. There was such a hue and cry that she withdrew the bill like 3 days later.
Wow.
So I think that there is still the opponents of Better Together are on guard. They are ready for when things come up. There is no successor to Better Together, so there's nobody plowing ground. Having said that, I think it's going to become clear over the next few years that certainly St. Louis City financially is going to be in a Detroit situation if something doesn't give, like they start doing services together with St. Louis County to save money. And the county's position is better, but not great. The county's still losing population. It's having some very difficult budgets. Still, the county is stable enough that it could stumble along. It won't be the city of St. Louis for another 10 or 15 years. So it'll take some, you know, looking into the crystal ball and looking ahead in St. Louis County before they start accepting the city as a partner. And likewise, the city, before this ever will happen, has to put itself forward as a good partner, which means it has to run what it has very efficiently and well, not do dumb stuff. And the headlines have been terrible with downtown crime and that sort of thing. So I think that it's absolutely necessary for the future of the region that it happens in the next 10 years. But I do not think if it came forward today, just like the police standards, it'd be dead on arrival until somebody plows some ground.
I think that statement of a good partner is absolutely on point, because I think the lines would be exactly where they were because there's no trust that's been built. I mean, as I see it, is that the St. Louis City as a partner isn't considered a trustworthy partner. You know, they have a hard time just picking up the trash. I mean, a very simple, like, basic element of local government of just picking up the trash and making sure that that's done is not something that is done well. You know, potholes is not something that's done well. So, you know, if the city could do, you know, their basic functions of government well, then they'd be seen as a more trusted partner, you know, and then on top of, you know, other policy issues that they seem to spend most of their time focusing on. If they could just, like, focus on, hey, we're going to just do government well.
Yeah.
And we're going to take care of our people at some of these basic levels. And we can be trusted with the money that we have. We can be trusted with being, like, adults and governing. Then I think that would change the tenor.
In what I think is a related issue, and I'm just going to fall on my sword and admit that I don't understand it. I probably am smart enough to understand it if I took the time to research it. But I was watching a report over the weekend on one of the local news channels about local control. What does that mean for everyone else out there in the audience that doesn't understand it, and why should people care?
So it's the St. Louis Police Department, and the St. Louis Police Department, under Francis Slay, there was a statewide law that was passed by the voters throughout the state that returned local control of the police department to St. Louis City. So St. Louis City now, like every other city in the state, including St. Charles County, controls its own police department. Kansas City does not. And why did St. Louis until about 8 years ago? Why it did not? During the Civil War, the St. Louis Police Department was also a militia, which probably was not all that common. And in 1861, at the beginning of the war, the governor was a Confederate sympathizer, and the city of St. Louis was Union-controlled. So the state of Missouri passed a law in 1861 taking over the St. Louis Police Department so that it would not be used against the Confederacy in the Civil War. And that state control of the police department lasted until about 8 years ago when Francis Slay, Rex Singfield, and some others put a thing on the state ballot, collected signatures, put a thing on the ballot to return it to local control. So today, the St. Louis Police Department, the chief reports to the Department of Public Safety director, who reports to the mayor. In the old days, the governor appointed four people and the mayor one, and the police chief reported to that board. So what's being debated now is to go back to that Civil War era governance over the modern governance where a city controls its own police department.
And is that, who is for that and for what reason?
So the St. Louis Police Officers Association is for it. Now, they will give you different reasons. They will tell you that the city has run the department very poorly during local control. But, of course, their police unions are not pushing for it in places with high crime, other places that have crime issues, either in Missouri or anywhere else. So that's what they would say. I would say that, like any other union, I think the police officers union would like to have more control over their bosses. And you do see that with some of these county fire protection districts in St. Louis County, where they elect a board, and you'll see the firefighters union basically electing their own people. So you have basically the organized labor also controls management, which generally doesn't end well. As a matter of fact, there's a new substitute bill that Senator Schroer, is that how he pronounces it? Schroer introduced, in which the St. Louis Police Officers Association, which represents sergeants and patrolmen, white sergeants and patrolmen, I guess, and the Ethical Society of Police, which represents African-American sergeants and patrolmen, they would control three of the five members of the board. So that's the latest thing that is on the table, which I think belies the fact that what the union wants is, like these firefighter unions have in the county, the union wants to be able to control management.
423 DGS on KMOX. It is the Think Tank. We usually do it on Tuesdays, doing it on Monday today. Jeff Rainford is here. Kurt Barr, head of elections in St. Charles, is here. We're talking about Steve Ellman on the break. Steve's a very good friend of all of ours, does the show all the time. And he said, probably last year, he was the first guy who I heard say this, but he said it right where Kurt's sitting, that as strong as St. Charles County is, it can't survive without the city. And if the city goes down, if the city dies, then we're all going to die with it. My question is, if we can be grown-ups and realistic, has the city already died and we just haven't been informed of that yet? Or is it on life support, or is there still a fighting chance?
I think that there's a fighting chance for the city. Absolutely. I mean, are there problems? And certainly there's a perception of problems. I mean, but I was talking about, you know, with Better Together, if the city could do simple things like, you know, trash service and potholes and start to just improve on those basic but physical things, then that will help to ensure a little bit more hope and trust. And with that, we can then build on that. We can talk about other issues. And, you know, we're never going to have a unified region if we are playing one city off of another city or another county, one municipality, one, you know, fire board against another police board against another. I mean, we need to figure out how to work together, but that requires us trusting each other. Part of that's the RD divide, but that's not really always the case. Sometimes it's just the city-county divide, the city-rural divide, and just knowing that we're all in it together, you know, and that we can do government well and take care of our people, I think will be huge. So there's always hope. Good leadership can always, you know, increase. But yeah, if we don't,
and we have examples that from other cities.
Yeah, so examples. So in the mid-70s, New York City was literally one day away from bankruptcy. And it was actually the unions that came in and lent them some money and saved them. And then the city came back in the 80s. And, you know, it may not be the, you know, it may have backslid a little bit. But still, New York is not what it was in the late 60s and early to mid 70s. And they were one day away from just totally, like, I guess what you would call, you know, that's the death penalty.
Yeah.
Same with Detroit. Detroit actually went into bankruptcy. And I don't think you could say Detroit is Shangri-La, but the Wall Street Journal 3 weeks ago had a story about the doom loop downtown, and a week later had a story of anybody looking for to resurrect a city, look at downtown Detroit. So whether it's dead or dying is probably doesn't matter, because even if it's dead, it can be resurrected. It happened in New York. It happened in Detroit. Atlanta was not Shangri-La before the 80s either. And look at Atlanta today. And then you have other cities that never really went through the doom loop but are booming, like Austin and Nashville. So I think that if we could just stop with the cheerleading for a little while. This is a wonderful place. I grew up here. I love it here. There's a lot to love about here, but we got to be able to tell ourselves the truth of where we are, or we'll never face what we need to do to get ourselves where we need to be.
About 2 minutes left in the segment. What are some of the things that the cities like Louisville and Nashville and Indianapolis that were in trouble and are now booming, what are some of the things that they did?
So Indianapolis decided one day, I don't know what day, you would know better than I, they decided that they were going to be the amateur sports capital of the country. They had a plan. Everybody knew what the plan is. Everybody agreed to the plan. There was no, oh, well, we can't give a subsidy for this. Or they agreed on what they needed to do. Atlanta, it was the airport. They all came together in the airport and made that an international airport, white and black, business people in labor, and then they got the Olympics and jumped off from there. Nashville has music, but now they're building off the music in multiple ways. They have, again, a plan that everybody knows to attract tech, but they're also inviting African-American professionals to come there. If you live in the city of St. Louis, you can get an in-state scholarship to the historically black college in Nashville. So they all have a plan that is not like, you know, try to save the famous bar building or the AT&T building. They all had a plan that was simple and easy to understand, and they had the leadership to bring everybody around on it. That's what happened in those cities. Other cities like Denver had natural advantages. San Jose has technology. We don't have those advantages. We don't have a mountain. We don't have a really big lake. We do have the river. Our riverfront is terrible. A good start might be doing something about that. You get off the arch grounds, and it's the worst riverfront I've ever seen. But I think it still comes down to, let's admit what we are. We can still love ourselves and still see ourselves as we are, and then start addressing what we need to do, I think, as a region in order to get us where we need to be. But as you pointed out, there are hopeful places that actually some of which were worse off than us that are making comebacks.
438 DGS. So we should have been going to the pregame today right now, but the game has been postponed for weather. Tomorrow there will be a doubleheader. First game will kick off at 2:40.
That's right.
Pre-game will start at 1:45.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll be with you from 1 to 1:45. Give you the best
roughly
45 minutes of your life. Oh, man, I'd be the best 45-minute show host of all time.
I wish the audience could have seen our reaction whenever we found out we had a 45-minute show tomorrow.
Well, it's funny because Andrew comes in. He's like, okay, I have good news and bad news. And we're just about to do Kurt and Rainford.
Right, right.
And I thought you were going to say, like, Kurt make it, but Rainford's here and he's got donuts. I'm like, oh. Okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Rach, you're not a believer in body deodorant?
I just don't understand what's going on with the full body deodorant. It didn't exist. And then suddenly about a year ago.
You had to have it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, by the way, you stink everywhere and you need to put this all over your body. And I'm going, just take a shower. Like, what's the big idea, people? Why is this suddenly an explosion? And every deodorant company is like, and we have made our own spray body deodorant now.
What I find interesting about it, I've only seen it on, well, I guess I've seen it on TikTok and I've seen it, I guess, on broadcast television. But it's kind of shamey. You know, it's directed at women because guys, you're like, yeah, I know I stink and I don't care that much. If you get that close, mm-hmm. It's over with anyway. But like the women are always like, yeah, I mean, they're creating their own need. Right.
Yeah. And for anybody listening, like, doctors and dermatologists say this is totally unnecessary.
Hmm.
Like,
look at you,
absolutely
knowing what dermatologists
not
say.
I Googled.
Oh, there you go.
This is Dr. Karan Lal, who is a double board certified dermatologist and a member of the Society of, you know, says
something's exciting.
Says all these ads that claim to be used from head to toe, not necessary at all, says the doctor.
It's not necessary. I mean,
you don't need to apply them to areas where you don't smell.
Yeah, it seems like it would make you smell worse if you're like, I'm not going to shower. I'm just going to put on this deodorant instead. Like,
are they saying don't wash?
Shower.
Well, I also read a thing that said, did you guys see the thing that said, like, daily showers are a myth and you don't need them
They have no benefits to you to shower every day. And I'm like,
yeah,
maybe you guys.
Yeah, I mean, saw that as well, but I'm still showering every day.
I will be taking a shower. I have a pretty good sense
of the timing, right, of your own body. I'd say daily.
I would try daily. I know this is a weird way to put it, but all of the places that are trying to convince you for the whole body deodorant, they're trying to sell it to you.
Of course.
Are your doctors saying do this?
No.
When you go to the dermatologist, they go, you know what you should really be doing? You should be using this stuff and this stuff here. No, it's coming from the companies that are trying to sell you the product.
Man, the danger of getting lazy and skipping shower day, skipping a day is like, then the next day it's like, I could probably skip it again. It's like, well, now we're on like day four.
Get on a bad
day. Hey, I trust
suddenly
those.
I'm reaching for the full body deodorant.
I'll trust the doctor that says you don't need to do something more than the company that says you need our product.
It's been decades since I washed my hair, but isn't that
a thing now?
You know, like you don't wash your hair every day?
Yeah, that is a thing. That is like common. Your hair is actually less greasy if you can. I'm not a hairstylist, so I don't know, but I've heard you can like train your hair to be less oily.
I've never heard someone say that. I've heard people say like, look, I'm not a doctor. Or like, look, I didn't go to law school, but I've never heard anyone own it like that. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not a cosmologist. A cosmetologist. Cosmetologist.
She's like, I am a hairdresser. I'm not your hairdresser.
Do not take this advice if it in any way bothers you.
No, but what I commonly see like on social media and stuff is every other day to wash your hair if you have greasy hair.
Good for you people.
I go like a little longer than that. You know, I try to push it off as long as I possibly can.
Hell, Wheels gets a haircut twice a week.
I know.
Hey! No. I do. I have to wash it every day, though, because I use product.
Your hair looks good. You have good hair.
It's the only good physical trait I have.
Wheels.